and we are back, episode 43 of Eurobash. We're back up in this. I'm with Niall McGrath as usual. How are you, my love?
Good, yeah. A little bit tired after the weekend. Mad weekend of fights, obviously. International Fight Week, UFC 239. Crazy card.
Unbelievable.
Was buzzing. Was absolutely buzzing on Saturday. Like, I wasn't going to buy it, but I bought it.
Oh, well, they got you hook, line, and sinker. Yeah, well, speaking of UFC 239, let's look at these headlines. John Jones and Amanda Nunes retain their UFC crowns. Also announced earlier in the week, James Gallagher v. Cal Eleanor to headline UFC Dublin. Cal Eleanor, of course, coming off the back of that win over former Cage Warriors champion Nathan Grayson. I think that's a good test. That's a fight I was asking for a long time ago.
It was. I saw that. You're
pretty much matched the whole card. But yeah, let's take a look at some of the other fights that I got confirmed later for that. Peter Queeley v. Ryan Scope. Lee Chadwick v. Carl Moore. Franz Malambo v. Dominique Wooding. Philip Mulpitter gets his debut against Keith McCabe, who's coming off that short notice loss against Bufando. Richie Smullen takes on Sean Tobin, a man who was matched to fight James Gallagher a long time ago. Dylan Logan fights Adam Gustab, who lost to Smullen in the last Bellator Dublin card. And Konstantin Gunsaryev fights Ian Coughlin. I think there's a few more fights that are going to be made horizon, soon. Yeah. So what do you think of that card so far, I guess, based on this? I see a lot of people, when I announce it, I really like Queeley Scope, I like Chadwick Moore, I like Malambo Wooding, and I like the main event. But I see a lot of people saying, like, this is a Bama card. This is 100% a Bama card with a Bellator sticker stuck on it.
Yeah. Probably is, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's not beat around the bush. But the one thing is, the matchmaking's a lot better than it was for the last card in Dublin. I think a lot of the fights are considered to be more competitive.
Absolutely.
Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, yeah.
So
that's, to be fair to Queeley, he had a tough fight on the first card, and he has a tough fight again.
Yeah. But I think in general, across the card, like, if you look at some of those bouts.
Gallagher, Eleanor's definitely a bigger name than the last guy, Graham, that James fought. But obviously, James is coming off his first professional loss. You could understand that to a certain extent.
And we know, obviously, we can't announce it yet, but we know of some more of the fights that are probably going to be announced in the next couple of weeks, and they are a lot more competitive.
Maybe even one tomorrow.
Yeah, okay, there we go.
But, yeah.
We're not going to tell yous.
But, yeah, don't get me arse slapped again. But, yeah, moving on. We'll come back to that in a second. Joanna Jędrzejczyk meets Michelle Waterson on October 12th in San Francisco. It. Amazing fight.
What a fight, man. That is potential to be female fight of the year. It's absolutely, like, one of those masterclass fights that we're going to see of unbelievable technique from both ladies. Oh, I'm so excited about that.
Gotta say, like, initial thoughts on this, I feel like Joanna has it. I just, like...
I think so.
Yeah.
But man, does bloody Waterson's Michelle great, Waterson have great speed. She's really good all round. So underrated with her ground game as well.
It's going to be a chess match for three rounds. I really think it is.
Definitely. Five rounder, is it?
It's five rounder. It's main event. Excuse me.
I love that. I think that's even better that it's a five rounder, and I'm totally buzzed for that.
Can Waterson keep that pace for 25 minutes?
Exactly. Yeah.
I think it could be a decision, phenomenal. But it's going to be an entertaining one. It's going to be an entertaining one.
Without question, man. It's one of the female fights of the year to watch, and I'm totally pumped for that one.
Also announced, Phil DeFries will take on Damian Grabowski in the headline act of KSW 50. That will be a third title defense for DeFries if he manages to do it. Obviously saw Grabowski get back to winning ways on the last KSW card. I like that fight. Makes a lot of sense. Two UFC veterans going at it. And DeFries, his march to taking over Poland continues. He's taken out all the Polish monsters they've put in front of him now. So let's see how he gets on with Grabowski. Also, actually, a note on that, Martin Lewandowski did an interview with the fantastic Casey Lydon and Esther Lynn and Jose Youngs while the International Fight Week was going down, and he confirmed that Roberto Saldich will also be on that card. So that's a big, big card.
Savage.
That's headed for London. Another bit that isn't quite over the line, I was speaking to some managers, etc. This one is being targeted for the Copenhagen main event, but nothing is confirmed as of yet. Jack Hermansson v. Jared Cannonier.
Yeah.
You know, Hermansson wanted Gastelum, but I suppose the thing about Jack is he was always going to fight in that card. He was never, like, he wants a fight on the Denmark card, without a doubt. So I'd say that's what the case was. Look, you can't get Gastelum. Will you fight Cannonier? That is not an easy fight.
Winner of that fight is getting a title shot.
That's not an easy fight, though. It's not an easy hellish. Fight.
It is. You know, we've seen Cannonier obviously coming off that win against Anderson Silva. You know, regardless of what way you want to look at it, he still stopped Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
In Brazil, went over there, whacked away at his legs, blew out his knee. Listen, that guy has put a run together, and I think if you look at what Hermansson's done in his last number of fights as well, putting away Souza last time out, this is a guy who's in prime condition and, you know, probably reaching the prime of his career. And to obviously do that against Shakira in such dominant fashion over the five rounds, which it was. It was a very, very straightforward victory in terms of, you know, when we went to judge the scorecard, everyone knew the result. For him to be fighting here and possibly headlining a card here as well, it's very, very sensible from the UFC in terms of marketing what they're going to do.
If he gets a big win, he has that big rousing win, reception in Scandinavia.
Trajectory here in Europe and then on to the US or wherever it may be, Australia for a big, big title fight. I think it's very sensible for the UFC if that does get over the line to be a main event.
Absolutely. Also, Sean Sheehan's ears will be turning red at the sound of this, but it looks like Alexander Gustafsson is having second thoughts about his retirement. I saw an interview with MMA Nyt, our homies over there. Not blatantly saying I'm coming back, but definitely getting that itchy feet. Also announced today, well, Mamed announced it himself, Mamed Khalidov is considering a return. You know, I have a feeling that KSW are going to do a big stadium show next year, and it's a name like that that's really going to sell out in Poland, isn't it? So,
You know, Gustafsson, you're going to go, like, you know, where does he come back to?
I thought he was the one guy that would stay would stick to his word, kind of, with that situation. Yeah, obviously, I don't judge him for it.
Obviously, no one's been confirmed, but, you know, 205, is it worth going back there from, you know, would he consider going to heavyweight, like, because I don't see an awful lot of options.
The sense in him going to heavyweight. He's not a big man.
But I don't really see the sense in him coming back because he's a long, long way away from a title shot, you know. I just find it very, very odd.
I want to see him completely depleting himself for a make middleweight, please.
Already present. You know, I mean, imagine.
I'm talking shit.
Imagine, yeah. But, nah, listen, I'd stay retired if I was him.
Yeah. Right, so I guess the big thing from a European perspective this weekend was the fact that this fight was on pay-per-view. It was about $22.95 for Irish customers, I believe.
A mess.
And, you know, I see a lot of people, though. The one thing that is kind of annoying me about it, I see people going like, oh, we got to ask Dana White about this. He doesn't own the rights to that. BT Sports. That's who made this decision. There's no two ways about it. They tried to do it with boxing as well. I saw Kevin Byrne, a very good boxing journalist, write back to Sean Sheehan's tweet about this. Like, Sean's basically saying they're gonna decide on what we're going to do with this by the numbers that buy it. I completely agree. And Kevin kind of said, they did this to us in terms of boxing, and if you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. So I do feel like it's BT Sports. Also, Chisanga Malata did an interview with David Shaw UFC about it. Like, he's blatantly saying, look, we've given them the rights. They buy the rights for this, so they can do whatever the hell they want with it. That's the way it goes, unfortunately. But Noel had a bit of an ordeal trying to tune that bad boy in.
Yeah, I came in on Thursday night, and then obviously I... Thursday night. What am I talking about? Saturday night after work. Got home about 10 o'clock, half 10. Went to buy the pay-per-view on the clicker on the channel. Normally you just
hit clicker.
Yeah, hit remote it. Remote control. The banger, I call it.
That's what other people call their Mickeys, by the way.
I call that Mickey as well, right? But it doesn't matter. So anyway, I went online. It said, told me I had to go online to buy it. So I went to Air Sport and then I had to buy it through BT and then referred back to Air. Put in your details, whatever, you pay for the, pull out your card, you pay for it there and then, and says, whatever, you can only watch it in one of your boxes, right? You have your Sky Q main box downstairs, and you have a mini box, it's not available to watch in the mini box, which is a total pain in the ass, and then, obviously, the prelims were on BT Sport, free, the UFC Fight Pass prelims, and the regular prelims were on, so I went downstairs then for the main card, and wouldn't work for like a half an hour. So I missed the whole first fight.
So you would just to clarify, you had bought this a lot in advance.
Oh, well, 10 o'clock in the evening.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. And so I went downstairs and it didn't literally come on till after Diego Sanchez fight against Michael Chiesa. Like, what the fuck? And you know, I went online to try and look for some help. Air Sports helpline is shut. There's no number to ring because it's too late. And there's no one on there's no one on their social media. So, like,
I'm glad they're putting the bodies behind this project.
You know, it's just a mess. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, total mess. I should be getting my money back for that because I missed the fight.
But you only wanted to see Diego Sanchez.
Yeah, that was it. My whole purpose of tuning in was to see Diego Sanchez after that interview with Ariel. But no, it was very, very frustrating. And I actually tweeted about it. And a guy, I can't remember who it was now, forgive me if you're listening in and I haven't forgot your name, tweet me, rep my head for not giving you homage. But basically, he was saying the same. He missed like half, three quarters of the card.
A lad from Cork said that.
I think it was Cork, yeah. So like that's what you're sort of dealing with. And if that's going to happen, you know, you're putting out a product and you can't even get it right in the first go, people are going up in arms about it. I think I put a poll on Saturday, Pizzy, and there's 1,100 votes. I think 97% said they weren't buying it, or 93% said they weren't buying it. 7% said they were. Like, that's pretty fucking
crazy. Like,
that's
crazy. Where I'd put the stats on that. About 100 people probably bought it.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised. But then you have, like, you know, there was another number of things as well. In terms of, you know, some of BT Sports, you know, online coverage as well. I found, like, a couple of people jumping into interviews and stuff. I'm not going to name names. You can see it there online. You know, pretty bad stuff altogether. I wasn't too impressed with that, seeing that. But yeah, just a bit of a mess. And I think it's something, maybe they'll try for the 242 card, and I think maybe after that they'll go like, fuck this, it's not working, because I don't think it is going to work. Just pay-per-view has never worked, man, on this side of the pond, unless
you've already paid for it. That's the problem, Joshua. You're paying the subscription. It's 3 a.m. Most people are watching these fights when they come back from the boozer, like.
I agree, yeah. And I guarantee you probably, you know, a lot more of those 97%, 93% probably did come back from the pub and said, fuck it, I'll just, you know, I'll buy it, rang up, and they probably didn't even get it because they fell asleep and stuff. Yeah, but you know, it is, it's annoying, and I don't think it's something that is going to be here by the end of the year. I'd be very surprised if they continued on.
PT Sports have taken a huge knock from it. Like, I mean, I'm looking at their social media, every post they put up, it's just being inundated with
but their coverage is crap though. Like, you know, any of the programming they do, it's boring, it's very generic, it's not something that is aimed towards the hardcore fan. Their online stuff isn't great either. I think they need a total, we've been saying this for God knows how long, 4 years now, they need a total overhaul on what they're doing. Like, they need to be pushing original programming if they're going to do a pay-per-view around it. I think it makes it much more appealing. If they want to sell it to a European market, get a European team there, a proper team who know what they're talking about, and push this towards their fans. Have a European spin on these pay-per-views instead of the shite we've to you know, put up with trying to actually access the fucking pay-per-views, you know what I mean?
Yeah, a bit of an ordeal to say the least. But let's get on to our first interview of the day. It's one of the big winners from
UFC. Rant one over, sorry.
Rant one down. It's one of the big winners from UFC 239. It's Arnold Allen. What a fantastic performance he put together against Gilbert Melendez. Like, I think Arnold's flown under the radar. I said this to him before the fight, even. He's 6-0 in the UFC now. That's the second longest streak in the division.
Yeah, McGregor, Aldo. Yeah. It's mental to
see. He didn't beat
that.
Either of those. What are you saying?
No, I'm turning in terms of fucking run. But no, amazing for him. You know, really good. I think it was a calculated performance. I'd still like to see a little bit more. But when you're putting away guys like Gil Melendez in such fashion on that big stage, pressure was obviously on him a lot. Went out and did it, you know, really good performance, in my opinion.
A 25-year-old kid introducing Gilbert Melendez to the featherweight division. Yeah. Like, I never looked at this like...
Was Gil's he disappointed with the performance, though? He seemed to be a little bit...
No. He seemed like... he said, like, he hasn't really watched it in depth. Like, I thought it was amazing, to be honest. He overwhelmed him. Like, you know, bell to bell. There was never a moment in the fight where I was like, here comes Gil.
Yeah, definitely.
He absolutely... He battered him and he took him down. Like, I mean, I think this guy has a huge future. And when that UFC London card comes around in March, man, if he has another win and he's on a 7-fight win streak going in there, he could look at co-main.
Yeah.
Depending on what's there, you know. So, great to speak to Arnold. He had just had a very disappointing breakfast in Denny's, I'm sad to report. But we got over it and we got to it in the end. Thanks so much to Arnold. We'll be back in about 10 minutes. And now I am joined by Arnold Allen, who was all the way in Las Vegas. He's just gorged himself on a big buffet breakfast, I imagine. But this man is now 6-0 in the UFC, coming off the most impressive performance of his career against former Strikeforce lightweight champion and legend, really, Gilbert Melendez. He now has the second longest streak, tied second in the featherweight division. And Arnold, finally, how are you feeling, man? That was absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm feeling all right. No, I just had Denny's. It was pretty disappointing, so I'm a little pissed off about that. But I mean, it's all right.
What did you get? What did you have?
It was like French toast grand slam or something with the pancakes on the side.
Oh no!
It was horrible.
No hash browns. I usually like the hash browns when I'm in Vegas. I stick the hash browns and bacon.
I don't like the hash browns. I don't like the way they do it. I like the old ones we have back there.
Well, there we have it. Here are the highs and lows of the life of an MMA fighter. Biggest win of his career and then terrible breakfast the next morning. I'm very sorry to hear that's happened.
Oh, it's devastating.
So, man, like, have you got a chance to watch this back? Like, I mean, it feels almost funny to me because we were talking about how low key you are, how the 5-0 was kind of float on the radar, and that's really the way you wanted it. But after that performance, I saw a huge outpouring of emotion on Twitter for you. A lot of people getting behind you. Just 25 years of age to do something like that against Melendez. It's pretty stunning to me. Have you been able to watch it?
Yeah, I watched it back this morning. I didn't really watch it properly. I kind of just watched bits. But I want to like have a proper like analyze it. But yeah, I'm always critiquing myself when I watch it back, so I don't really enjoy it.
What for you is the most impressive thing about that? Like, I mean, I think people will say straight away your dynamic striking was a joy to behold. Like, I mean, catching them on the end of your left hand, the beautiful shots to the liver. But I mean, was there anything in there for you that impressed you the most about what you were able to do with them?
No, I was happy to score a takedown to sort of, you know, show I can wrestle with the big boys and stuff. And yeah, I was happy with that. The striking was pretty much kind of what I expected. You know, we know the way he fights. He's a little heavy on his feet, sort of throws wild. So I knew he'd be a bit slow. But yeah, so it was everything I expected there. But yeah, I was happy to score the takedown.
Yeah, yeah. I saw you approach Gilbert at the end of the fight. And I mean, you're a guy that's always very respectful to your opponents. But I knew this one was particularly special because we talked about it beforehand. This is without a doubt the biggest name you've ever faced. A legend, as I said. What did you say to Gilbert afterwards?
I just said it was like an honour to share the cage with him. He's a legend.
Yeah.
That was all. Yeah. He's a legend, isn't
he? He is indeed, man. And do you feel what I'm talking about when I say this big, the kind of outpouring of praise, etc.? Do you feel that this is even bigger on the back of this win than it has been for your 5 previous wins in the UFC?
Yeah, definitely. And everything, especially UFC wise or fight wise, everything over this side of the pond is a lot bigger, isn't it? There's a lot more eyes on it. Back home, it's big, but it's not quite the same just yet.
Yeah, and I mean, do you feel like after being over there and fighting in the US, given that you do spend time in TriStar in Canada, does this suit you better? Like, is it a bit of a runaround when you have to go back to Europe and stuff?
No, it's right. Last time I fought in London, I just went home for a bit. I went home for a couple of days to check in. It was nice to hang out with my family and hang out with the dog. And I saw everywhere was familiar, you know, I knew all the places to eat. It was a bit hard here trying to find somewhere to eat before. So everybody seems to be like covered in cheese and stuff, you know.
It would be fine if you weren't fighting, right? It's just with the whole fight there, yeah. It makes it complicated.
Yeah, exactly. When you're looking at all the places you can't eat, there's not really anywhere you could go.
I was speaking to your coach, Jack Mason, and I was obviously, I'm looking at the corner there last night. I see your dad, Faraz, and Jack. How does that work? Like, I mean, I know you spend a lot of time in Canada, but Jack is still obviously very involved still. How does that work with Faraz and him and your dad, everything? How does it come together?
We have a great relationship, to be honest. Jack does a huge role in my career. Like, if it wasn't for him, these fights wouldn't get put together, that's for sure. Like, he takes care of most of the stuff, and yeah, he's a huge help. But yeah, you know, Fraz goes in as a head coach. He's the mastermind. He comes with the plan, and yeah, we stick to the plan. And my dad, he runs the fan, the towel fan.
It sounds like it's a good organization. Everyone has their own job, and everyone's happy enough. It seems like there is a great mood in the corner, though.
Yeah, it works good. Nah, it's all good. It works well.
I'm a bit surprised that you didn't get a bonus, I'm going to be completely honest, because, you know, seeing this kind of, like, even though you have been in there for a long time, but to do that, like, is a breakout performance as far as I'm concerned. Were you a bit disappointed that they didn't throw a check your way?
I wasn't surprised after a couple of knockouts and stuff, and usually there's always one on the main card or something. The main card get more attention, don't they?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe get a little small one.
Did you see the Masvidal KO? That's obviously taken most of the headlines. Did you go out and watch the fights after yours? Did you manage to see a lot of the card?
We literally watched that fight in the changing room, and then we headed out. But that was scary. So everyone was silent backstage. So
yeah,
that was scary.
It is indeed. You know, when I was speaking to Jack earlier, we were kind of talking about, very briefly, this was not an in-depth conversation anyway. I was just kind of saying, you know, what's next? Like, this looks like it's going to open you up into the rankings. And as we know, things happen very fast. Once you're in there, there's more likelihood of you getting ranked opponents and stuff like this. Like, I mean, first of all, when would you like to get back in there, Arnold? Because I know you've said to me before that, you know, you'd never planned to be this inactive. You wanted to fight a lot more. When, ideally, for you, would be a good time to get back in?
Yeah, you know, end of the year, I'm not really, I've got a few little injuries and stuff, but nothing. I've got my hands a bit fat, my shins a bit swollen. I don't think there's anything that's going to be too sore for too long. But, end of the year or something would be nice.
Go ahead, man. Sorry.
Jack's always sort of telling me I don't need to rush. You know, he's always confirming I'm 25 and I don't have to rush. Just take my time, keep getting better. So I just listen to him.
Yeah, and I agree with him completely. But I feel like after a performance like that, there's going to be so much appetite from the fans trying to push you. Come on, we want to see this. We want to see that. It's going to be a whole new deal, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
But is there any of those, when you look at these the rankings, like, I mean, you're looking at names like Lamas that are there towards in the 10 to 15 rankings, like, that's another big test of experience. Would someone like that appeal to you at the moment, having got such an impressive display against Gil? Would, like, someone like Lamas, who's more experienced in the featherweight division, having fought for a title, would that kind of fight appeal to you? Or am I trying to put words in your mouth here, do you think?
No, like, for sure, if that's, I'm like the fight, so whatever I'm told to do, that's what I do. And if Perez and Jack are happy with that, then, you know, I'm cool with that.
and as we spoke about before this, Arnold, like, this is going to make, like, I mean, this win now, you 6-0 as a featherweight, you such a huge win over such a huge name. If this momentum continues, as we said before this fight, this is going to lead to a massive, massive fight in London, right? Like, you must be looking, like, you're nearly guaranteed main card. I mean, it could be up as far as co-main or main, right? If this keeps going.
Yeah. I don't know. I always get overlooked whenever. So yeah, I end up on the prelims. So I think it's going to talk about shit. I don't post a whole lot about fighting on my social media, really. But, you know, guys, you post about 30 Instagram stories a day about their fight coming up, don't they? So it's not really me.
I went on and looked at your Jeep. It's an impressive piece of machinery, man. Snorkel on the side and everything. My God.
Yeah, I need some love, though. It's rusting away.
That, you must be doing some serious off-roading on that thing, do you? Because it's kitted out for it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun.
You're kind of like action, man, aren't you?
You don't want to enjoy that more stuff. I work on that and stuff. I was trying to do it around the camp. I was trying to fix bits on it, and I was out in the bloody rain trying to fit parts to it before sparring and shit.
Sounds amazing. Like, I mean, just finally, Arnold, is there any part of you that's surprised by yourself here, or was this something that you guys knew you were capable? It was only a matter of time before we saw a performance like this where you completely dominate a household name, let's be honest.
No, I wasn't surprised. I kind of, like, always known I had that sort of ability to do it, but I just kind of haven't rise to the occasion yet. I always felt like having that tough test and having that big name across the cage is gonna bring out the best of me, and yeah, it did. So I was happy it did.
Well, listen, man, you're an absolute gentleman for getting on to speak to me. I hope you find yourself a way better breakfast for tomorrow. I think you should go for, like, something simple, like steak and eggs, you know what I mean? Don't mess around, just get something that they won't mess up for you. I think that's the way to go,
man. They can't mess that up, surely.
Well, report back, let me know if they do, so we can get on them on Twitter and lambast them. But thanks very much, man, and congratulations. You enjoy your celebrations. And great to hear from Arnie. As I said, big fight probably.
Ireland Allen, we claimed him.
Ireland Allen, yeah. Great win for him.
Awesome.
Let's take a closer look at this card. One thing that's annoying me, once again, Dana White comes out and he says something crazy afterwards that did he say he had Jones winning every round or something like that?
He basically said in a tweet, or he said in an interview with Brett Okamoto from ESPN, that anyone who watched that fight and didn't score to John Jones should never watch a mixed martial arts fight again.
I scored to John Jones, but I knew it was very close. Like, I knew it was really close. My friend that I was watching with, he thought Santos might have edged it, you know?
Originally, I scored to Santos. I've watched it back about three times, the fight, and you can go. You know, John's Jones probably had the more output in the fight. I could easily score for Jones as well. I've no gripes at all whatsoever, but Dana White's talking through his cacks if he believes.
Like he can't keep doing this stuff where his sentiment doesn't reverberate with the fan base at all.
Yeah.
And like I didn't like the fact that the boos that were going down. I thought that was a great fight to watch.
Crazy, the boos.
You could see the leg going on Thiago early. That was a subplot.
You know what it was though? It was a big fight, Las Vegas crowd, casual fans in there, a lot of them. And the tickets, I think the cheapest tickets for the night were $350, so that probably says something to you.
Yeah,
a lot of celebrities in the crowd as well. I saw Dan Bilzerian with two girls.
Never heard of him. He didn't want to take Thiago down, and I felt like he had a huge advantage if it did go to the ground, but he was kind of saying, I felt like that would have been a defeat. He's setting challenges inside challenges in these fights. So it's not like we're not going in and going to watch him bolt. He's trying to prove things to himself, I feel, in the fight. It probably doesn't result in the most spectacular thing in the world. Is it wise? Probably not, you know.
No, it is. I think
no, but is it wise to restrict yourself to a certain skill set against an opponent? Like,
no, well, I don't think he did that.
That's what he said he did. Like, where did he take him down? Where's the grappling?
Yeah, that is true. He doesn't do an awful lot of grappling.
He does do an awful lot of grappling in his fights.
Not these days, does he?
But I mean, he's brilliant wrestler. Like,
I know he is.
Like, that's where.
Do we see enough of it though?
Not at all. Like in that fight, not at all. And he says after the fight, I could have wrestled him, but I thought that would be a defeat in itself. I thought I would have lost.
That's odd to say that. But yeah, if you look at the fight, and I think what he was trying to do in terms of his stand-up was march forward and control the octagon. And a lot of the time, you could see the leg kicks were hampering him. And they didn't seem to have a second plan for what to do with those leg kicks.
That's the first time I've seen him really affected by that. And it's something really that people often talk about. Like, oh, I'm going to attack his legs. Look at his skinny legs. It's the first person I've ever seen.
Properly do to him. But he had no answers for it, which I found strange for Jones, because he got battered and battered time after time with that leg, and he was still trying
to come
forward.
Even the last round, like, he's smacking. Yeah, but it was a good fight. I liked it. I think Thiago Santos deserves a hell of a lot more credit than he's getting.
High-quality championship fight.
Amanda Nunes is the greatest female fighter of all time.
Easily. We don't even need to say anything else about it. Just fantastic.
Amazing woman. Incredible. Street Jesus. Jorge Masvidal. Well, look, I hate to say it, but hands up in the air. Maybe he was right not to fight Leon Edwards, because would he get that kind of back and forth in the lead up to the fight, that kind of heat, and then to put him away that quickly?
Yeah.
I mean, he's got all the juice right now.
Yeah,
I mean, when you look at the videos coming out of this event, look at the amount of traction he's getting. It couldn't have possibly got that from Leon Edwards.
Nate Diaz, the second coming. That's what I sort of...
Kind of feels like that after Beck Connor,
it does, doesn't it? And, you know, that's a fight that could very well happen in the line if they want to make big bucks.
He's going to get that title fight. He's too much. He's got too much traction.
I think so. Yeah,
and there's no way the UFC in this day and age where everything is based on traction. The only reason why the Leon Edwards fight wasn't made was because of a lack of traction I felt on they felt he'd bring to the table.
I think we're looking at Kamaru Usman and Jorge Masvidal from Madison Square Garden in November. That's the way I'm looking at it. And you know, interesting as well. You know, he's seemed to back up what Colby said to me last week, that they're both willing to throw down. I could see that happening potentially after.
Yeah.
And that, man, again, that's another... That's
going to be some negotiation.
For two guys, you know, to really sort of levitate them into this sort of multi-million dollar fight. And I could see it being that way. If they sold that right, and they're two bloody smart guys as well in terms of marketing themselves, what we've seen, especially from Jorge in the last few months, we know Colby can do it. Man... You know, to have that whole angle, best friends, former training partners, you know, going to war. And
It's just phenomenal.
Man, I looked at some of the names of the welterweight division, you're like, holy fucking God. Yeah. Best division in March. It's probably as good, if not better, than the lightweight division now at the moment.
I like 35 as well, to be honest. There's a good few of them. But Jan Blachowicz shocks the world.
Didn't shock you, Petey?
No, I thought a lot of people were underestimating him. And I interviewed him on Thursday. And I tweeted out after a fight. But he goes to me, every time I visualize this fight, it's me finishing with me left hand in the second round.
Yeah.
Damn.
It was.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And, you know, I feel like Jan, that's the biggest win of his career.
Hands down.
But it's interesting because he's coming off a loss to Santos.
Yeah.
And now he's going into this, what did I do with him now? He's after really upsetting the apple cart. I'm sure they were thinking about, we can do this with Rockhold. We can build towards Jones and Rockhold. And
interesting comments from Dane afterwards. Says he wants Luke Rockhold to retire.
I was shocked by that.
Yeah, I was shocked as well.
I was shocked, man. Like, he mustn't like him very much.
Yeah, there's always been a bit of heat, I think, between the two of them. But, Rockhold has looked very, very distinctly average in his last number of fights. Since Bisping, he just...
Yeah.
Something missing, man.
But can I just say... He wasn't even goaded into that question. He just went for it. There wasn't even like, what do you think of Luke Rockhold's future? He was like, retire. Like he took a question about someone else retiring, and he basically, probably Diego, and he spun it into Luke Rockhold should retire or something like that.
Yeah, it's an odd one, isn't it? Obviously with Henry Hoof now as well, and you know, maybe he was better off at you know, AKA, I don't know. It just seemed to, it really hasn't worked out. I think maybe the way he would have wanted it to, but you know, should he retire?
I mean, that's up for him to decide. I don't think many people are like, definitely retire. Luke, you know? This guy has to call it a day.
But he has. I will say one thing. There's been a massive decline in his performances, in my opinion.
Like, that's fair enough, right? Like, I mean, you can definitely understand that line of thought on it, but I just thought it was a bit crazy. Like his losses at middleweight, like to Yoel Romero and obviously Michael Bisping.
Just before we move on, just going back to, you know, the welterweight situation, fair play to Ben Askren as well, took it like a champ on the chin.
Yeah, I heard him on Ariel on the way up.
And, you know, there was a lot of people shitting on him as well, and I thought it's not cool to see that when a guy gets so
also,
body knocked out.
But it's also the nature of the beast. If you go out and you stick your finger in someone's chest and you talk that big talk, you've got to be ready for the other side of it.
Yeah, of course.
And we've seen it time and time again. I mean, James Gallagher, Conor McGregor.
So, yeah, someone, interesting enough, someone commented on my Facebook page saying this was a disgrace, I'm shouting in his face afterwards and stuff like that, and I was like, well, mate, you're obviously a casual or something tuning in and saying that sort of shit. It's part of the fight game. It's the way it works. These guys are, you know, obviously, you know, aesthetically, it looked quite violent.
I know, but look, he used that situation to elevate himself. He's in the post-fight totally press conference saying, it's not sportsmanship. Yeah. You shouldn't pat him on the back for it. But this is a narrative that he's controlling now.
100%, so I agree.
You could tell there was venom between these two guys. If it was just shaking hands afterwards, that wouldn't go with the whole, this man's real, the street Jesus
gangster,
thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, his videos, as I keep saying.
It's marketing,
viral after viral after viral, and he's just being himself, I feel. Honestly, like, I feel like he's being like a, you know, hyperbolic version of himself, but certainly you get the impression that's the kind of guy Jorge Masvidal is, and that's why people are getting behind him.
100%.
Like, it's not...
Sometimes I don't think people understand that, you know, the casual onlooker, that it's part of adrenaline, you know, obviously, you know, during a fight, and when they get someone out, there's obviously a big high, and then he's obviously trying to keep up this act for the... Well, not act.
I don't think it's an act.
He wants to keep up this for the marketing campaign, but... That's pretty much it.
Yeah, absolutely. As we said earlier, Arnold Allen, great win over Gil Melendez. Marlon Vera defeats Hernandez. Marlon Vera looked great, man. Really nice rear naked choke in the second round. Want to see that fight with Nathaniel Wood. Claudia Gadelha gets a decision over Ronda Marquez. Not the most spectacular win of all
time. It was a very, very lethargic fight. Very hesitant, I felt, with both ladies. But listen, fair play to Claudia Gadelha. She came out and said afterwards, you know, she's working with Mark Henry now, and she's just implementing a lot of new...
She probably couldn't understand the codes he was showing in the corner. Yeah. What do you mean, 7?
5-5-1, Claude Jeff, 5-5-1, 2-9, 2-9, Bronx.
Your dong song, is he a teenager, is he not a teenager?
Oh,
he's 21,
God.
But he's amazing, and I've been
that
very...
That dong fella's like hard.
Yeah, Parrot.
Your dong is hard.
Yeah. Oh, no.
And
we had a... 3 defeats for Europe on the undercard. I mean, the Facebook prelims. Shabazian looked pretty goddamn good against Jack Marshman.
Unbelievable.
He steamrolled him, and that's a very difficult thing to do against someone like Marshman.
Marshman,
I mean,
has been in some fucking wars back and forth, and this guy came out off the fucking front foot and just butchered Jack Marshman. That is a tough dude. I'm a believer now to Edmund Shabazian.
Yeah, absolutely. The Edmund, he's relighting that flame.
He is, isn't
Tard
he?
Tardverdian, yeah. Ismael Nurdiyev, the Austrian wonderboy, did not have a... Like, I mean, he looks very dangerous when he's standing. There's no doubt about it.
He looked tired, though, man. He gassed. I felt.
Chance Rancounter is he's a dogged man, isn't
dogged
he?
Like, motherfucker.
He really
he?
Is, yeah. Really impressed with that guy.
Yeah, definitely.
And
Julia
Vila.
Massive underdog as well.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Massive. Biggest on the card, I think.
And... Pani got off to not got off, she's already fought in the UFC, but a decision loss to Julia Avila there. And I didn't disagree with those judges.
I didn't either.
Right, so that's everything from 239, I guess. I guess the biggest story, though, coming out of it has to be Masvidal, right?
Yeah, man.
Two fights, he's back, and he's in the title picture. It's pretty unbelievable.
Stole the
two
line.
Two starches, Mike. Like starch Darren it, Till, and that's, starch Ben Askren.
But that's what he's needed in his career, and he's somewhere he's found this from. And
in the rainforest.
And the fact they practiced that for so long, and that knee, and we saw the videos, obviously, Mike Brown put up absolutely just unbelievable to go out and actually translate that over. It's something like you'd see in a movie. You couldn't write that shit. Yeah. And obviously Colby Covington actually said it to me last week, because I predicted T for T, he's going to hit him with a knee, man, when he's shooting in, going to knock him out. Brilliant, brilliant stuff. And yeah, listen, the whole persona around him now, the image, you know, he's been very vocal with the media. This guy is an absolute superstar, and I think we're going to see a lot more of Jorge Masvidal.
Did you notice they were using my interview from London?
I did. I was about to say that to you until you interrupted me on something.
Who do I invoice at the UFC for that?
They've done it to me a few times as well. They're
I've never had one of these things.
Have you not?
No.
They put me on the two count.
Talking Brawls. I remember that. Yeah,
Talking Brawls on the before 206, and I was on for Off the Ball before the last fight against Habib. Yeah. Little clip. They're bastards. Like, why don't they pay us for this?
I'll take 25,000 colquits.
Yeah, 100 grand. I'll do the same for the
I don't want that coming out of the BT pay-per-view pool.
They are actually technically breaking the law, showing someone's footage. They credit copyright
us.
Theft.
They did credit us.
Yeah, but credit still, copyright theft. You're not allowed to do it without permission.
Right, well, look, we're going to get on with the next interview. It's Gunnar Nelson, an Irish legend. An Icelandic legend and a European legend. He's obviously fighting Thiago Alves, the first fight announced on that Copenhagen card. A lot of people excited about it. I got his take on that and his take on Masvidal Askren. We'll be back shortly. We love yous loads. Talk to you soon. And I am now joined by, as promised, the great Gunnar Nelson. Gunnar, how are you, my friend? Great to hear from you again.
I'm very good. Very good. Good to hear from you as well.
I got to ask you, Gunnar, the last time I spoke to you was in London, and obviously the fight didn't go that your way that night, a very close fight with Leon Edwards. You know, I know you posted afterwards and you were talking about lessons learned, but what have you taken from that fight now a few months down the line? What do you take from that?
You know, there were some strategical mistakes I feel I'd done in that fight, and I should have pushed more. You know, I had plenty of energy in the third round, and I just feel like I was waiting a bit too much, and he was kind of waiting as well. But he kind of got ahead of points. There's a few, like for an example, in the first round where I was kind of waiting, he was on top of me against the cage, we were kind of half down, and I'm waiting for him to go for my back or go for the neck and stuff, and which is when I'm going to make my move to get him, to throw him over. And I left a lot of openings. He was kind of picking on me with these shots that were doing absolutely nothing there. And I was just kind of leaving a few openings, but he just wouldn't take it. I think he just played it smart, and he's a pretty strategical player who likes to, you know, he wins a lot of fights on points, I guess. He fought a good fight there, and my lesson was mainly, if I am to take it to one, is that I should have pushed him more.
So you're one of the elite welterweights in that division. Do you feel as though Leon is a guy that can go up there and challenge? Like, I understand what you're saying about the kind of point style of fighting. A lot of people criticize him for that, but having been in there and with your experience with him, you know, do you feel like he can go the whole way here, or do you think he's going to struggle at the top?
I don't know how he deals with different energies, but he's very good, and I think he could. You know, there's a lot of good guys that, like, there's been a lot of champions that played, you know, the point game and more playing points than actual finishers, you know. But we'll see.
There was huge excitement on the announcement for your next fight against Thiago Alves. It was the first fight announced for this Copenhagen card, and I know that a lot of people are very excited in Scandinavia about this. How happy are you with this? Of course, when I think about this matchup, I think, you know, Thiago Alves was fighting for titles nearly 4 or 5 years before you got into the UFC. What is your take on this guy? A legend, many people see him as.
Yeah, he's somebody who's well known, so it's a good fight. You know, I think I'm excited to fight Thiago. He's a little pit bull in it.
Yes,
and he's been around for a long time. I don't know if is he ranked or is he's not ranked.
He's not ranked at the moment, but he's been up there at the very top. Obviously, fought GSP for the title. I think that was UFC 100. Yeah,
he kind of disappeared a little bit after USADA, I think.
Is that, do you have any suspicions in that regard?
Yes, I do.
Is go ahead.
I don't know. I just USADA has done a great job in the UFC, and I'm really happy with how things have gone. You know, you see a big difference in a lot of fighters after they came in, and obviously there's still guys doing something and they're getting popped here and there, and probably some are getting away with it. You know, I don't know, but at least it's making them scared now, and they can't take as much or take the same things or whatever they're doing. You know, it's affecting it. You know what I mean? Like, and I love that.
When you fight a guy, like, you've been such an advocate for clean fighting your whole life, you know, like, I mean, I'm talking even before the UFC, you would talk about this at length. When you come up against a guy with Alves who you are suspicious of in that regard, does that give you more of an impetus when you're going in to fight a guy like that? Does it give you something extra to be fighting for, or is it something you just put to the back of your mind?
It's not really something I think about when it's time to fight and stuff. You know, it is what it is, and I'll just go out and feel the energy and deal with the energy that comes. But it's definitely a factor, you know. It is a huge factor, and I don't like that guys are doing it, but you know, they do, and they do at the top level as well. You see what TJ Dillashaw got caught for, some stuff.
EPO.
EPO, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah. Lance Armstrong here.
Yeah, so like, guys are getting popped, and it's, of course, it's a factor. Now, I don't really think about it too much, you know. I have my views on it, but there's nothing I can do about it, really. You know, if a guy that I'm fighting is gonna take some stuff, and maybe he gets away with it, maybe not. But all I gotta do is just think about what I'm going to do, and you know, there's no point really. Mm. You know, they should take care of that. USADA should take care of all that, and I'm just gonna let them and not really pay any attention of it. But it's, for example, when Carl fought you, man,
Mike King, yeah,
he got popped afterwards, and I thought it was great what they did, was give Carl his bonus and all that, and that's gotta feel good for Carl as well, you know. Knowing that you were fighting, this guy was on steroids and stuff, and you still bet him, and he came through and stuff. That's got to feel good, you know. But I just don't understand how, like, some of these guys, they probably think that everybody's doing it, right? That's why they do it. But not everybody is doing it. And then you're fighting some guy, and you're on the gear, and he's not, and you lose, or... Even if you win, like, does it feel the same? I can't imagine. So,
I guess you kind of have to make peace with it in some way. Like what you're saying there, they probably think that everybody's doing it. But if there's one man I know that isn't, who I'd swear over the Bible, it would be you, Gunnar. I know how passionate you are about clean sport.
Yeah. If I need steroids to keep doing what I'm doing, I'm not going to compete anymore. I'm going to stop competing, and then I'll fucking do my steroids to be able to train or whatever. But I can't see myself ever doing it, you know? I'm a little scared of it as well. I'd be scared of my health. I don't know what it does to you. You hear all these stories about, you know, the organs or whatever, it kind of fucks you up and stuff. And then when I'm older, I've kind of burned a lot of energy, just, you know, burned my life energy taking steroids, running too fast. Just, I don't know. It's just not me. I'll just stay away from it and, you know, do it my way.
Absolutely. You know, I was wondering, I don't know if you've caught this story, but Nicholas Dalby had an insane bloodbath of a fight in the main event of Cage Warriors 106. And this guy has geared his whole life to being on this Copenhagen card, the one where you're fighting Thiago Alves. And, you know, a lot of people have got behind him since the fight. It was judged a no contest, so he didn't really get the closure he wanted, obviously, to unify the cage warriors belts and go again. But, you know, as a fellow Scandinavian, would you like to see Dalby on that card? Do you feel he deserves that?
Yeah, I definitely think he deserves a shot to come back on that card. And it makes sense, man, in his hometown. And he's been on a rip now. He's been doing really well.
Absolutely.
He seems like a different man. You know, he was going through some shit for a while, and it kind of messed him up a bit. But he's coming back now, and he's training hard, and he's looking good, and he's doing well. And this was a crazy fight there he had, and I don't know. I think he should get another shot for sure.
And it would mean a lot to the Danish fans, right? If they're going to a market for the first time, to have a guy that's so well known in the country, it makes sense for the UFC, right?
It does.
I wanted to ask you about a fight that took place this weekend. You probably know which one I'm talking about. Jorge Masvidal v. Ben Askren. These are two guys, you know, around that London fight, I felt you were very in close proximity to both of those guys, to be honest. I know that you've been chasing a fight with Masvidal for a long time. But, I mean, what was your reaction to that? Did that shock you? It certainly shocked me.
Well, I think it shocked everyone. It was 3 seconds, 5 seconds, or something. But that's the fighting game, you know. It was a beautiful name. It probably feels weird for Ben Askren. He probably remembers that he was walking in, and he doesn't remember anymore of that night. You know what I mean? Like, that was basically not a fight, you know. He didn't get the chance to actually fight him, and just got taken out like split second.
Yeah, it was crazy. And like, is there any way, like, I mean, Masvidal's a guy that's been on the scene for a long, long time. My God, that man has been fighting for a long, long time. Like, I mean, is there anything you can take from that late surge? Like, he's had two big wins, and now he's knocking on the door of a title fight. Like, I mean, do you take anything away from that career trajectory? Like, I know you might not know Jorge personally, but does that kind of affect a fighter when he sees that kind of guy making such a big statement with just pretty much two fights?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I haven't really thought about it too much, to be honest with you, but he's been doing good for himself lately. He had a nice fight against Till, and that was a big knockout. Everybody was talking about it, and it's, well, first time Till has been knocked out, is it?
That was his second loss. The first time he was being knocked out, I think. It was a pretty bad one.
So that's a big one. And Till is, you know, the great striker. So that's a big one. And now,
I know you wanted that fight with Till as well, right?
I was kind of lucky in that fight against Robbie Lawler. I think you could probably agree on that. I mean, he had to survive some shit, and then he got that choke, and then it wasn't really on, and, you know, referee thought that Robbie was out, but he wasn't out, and I don't know. I think he got an easy one out there, and he did not look good when he stood up there after a few crackers from Robbie, and I don't know, he looked quite slow.
Yes, he has. Is that, like, I mean, I can remember when Ben first signed, a lot of people were talking about your grappling versus his grappling. Like, I mean, does that matchup appeal to you at all? I know it's not really the right time to be talking about, given that Askren's just lost, but down the line, I mean, Askren says he will continue to fight. He appeared on Ariel Helwani's show earlier today, but I was wondering, like, would that appeal to you ever, a fight with Askren, or is that not really on your radar at the moment?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think it's a very exciting matchup, and I'd love to fight Askren at some point. He's a great fighter, and he's a good grappler, and he has his own style, and I think he'd be very interesting.
Yeah, I do as well. Like, what do you think of, like, how much do you rate his grappling in MMA? I know, like, obviously he's a fantastic wrestler,
he's done really well in MMA. I think his striking definitely needs a bit of a brush up, but on the grappling department, he's very good. He's good at keeping guys down and then kind of beating on them and wearing them out and stuff. I don't think he has my submission skills, but he's much more decorated in wrestling. Obviously, I have never competed in wrestling, so he's a decorated wrestler and he's really good in that area. And I think it'd be interesting.
And just finally, Gunny, and thanks so much for your time today. You know, there was all that excitement, as I said, having a legend like Thiago Alves fight you in Copenhagen. Just one of the comments I saw often enough was that Alves has passed it, that Gunny's going to go through him. Like, is that an unhealthy way for you to look at this fight? Like, do you have to prepare for the Thiago Alves that was getting ready to fight GSP in 2009? Like, do you prepare for the best possible version of Thiago Alves when you're getting ready for these fights?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'll be expecting him to come out, you know, be ready to be fit, to be strong and good, you know. I always expect that from the guys that I'm fighting. You expect the very best from them, and you deal with that. And if he doesn't show up feeling good, then that's that. But I expect him to do.
Gunnar, you're an absolute gentleman. Thank you so much for your time today. I can't wait to see you in Copenhagen again. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be my first time. What should I do in Denmark? What would you recommend?
I don't know, streaking.
Did you say streaking? Do you mean get my clothes off and run through the streets?
What's it called? The walking street. The main walking street is probably the only place I know there, and I always go there. It's like the kind of center. Other than that, I've been there a few times. I've not really done anything, so I wouldn't be.
Well, look, I'll make sure I walk up the main street. That's a brilliant recommendation, Gunnar. Thank you so much. But
it's a cozy place.
Brilliant.
Cozy place.
That's what I like. I like coziness. But Gunnar, you're an absolute gentleman. I really can't wait to see you back in there. And thank you for giving me so much time today.
Oh, thanks a lot.
All the best, my friend. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
And what an action-packed interview from our very own Gunnar Nelson. Lots to say there about Thiago Alves that I didn't see coming, to be honest, before. But fair play to him. I will never criticize a man for speaking his mind. And on a man who speaks his mind, let's welcome back in Noel McGrath. How are you, sir?
I'm good, yeah. Enjoy that one. Interesting from Gunnar, as always, putting Thiago Alves on the rack.
That's it.
And literally trumps down him. It's great. I like a bit of that.
Yeah, come on.
Nothing wrong with it, man.
But you can tell, like, there was no strategy there. Like, you know, this is how he feels. He speaks
funny. He does. He shoots the breeze, you know, and got a lot more comfortable with the media over the last number of years as well. And really good stuff.
I think we had to understand him a bit more, to be honest, as well. I think we were all kind of running at him, hoping.
Everyone
that
was going like, he was made out to be, as you said before, this freak, and he's not. He's just a normal, chilled out, lovely
he's
guy.
To the
he's
earth.
Such a nice guy.
Yeah.
And I think fatherhood as well, obviously, sort of brings a little bit of calmness sometimes for the first couple of years, anyway, till they hit the terrible twos, and then boom, they're all fucking, they're mental, and their kids driving them mad. But yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, he's a great lad. And of course, we're approaching that 5-year anniversary for the UFC Dublin show that he referenced there with the Mike King.
19th of July, isn't it?
Yeah, might have something special out there.
Oh, look, he's dropping some fucking,
dunno,
some hinders as
who
well.
Knows? So yeah, let's take a look at this weekend's action, starting on Friday night with Bellator 224, which should be available to you on Sky Sports, y'all. Julia Budd and Olga Rubin for the 45 title in the main event. We're not going to run through the whole card, though, because we have got some Europeans on this bad boy.
SBGers.
Yes, a trio of SBGers. I've got to say, this is the toughest fight of Sinead Kavanagh's life, going in against Leslie Smith. Leslie, a battle-hardened veteran, who's been in there with some of the best fighters in the world.
Scrap pack.
She's an animal, man. And Sinead is an animal too, but you look at the experience differential there, you look at the opponents Leslie's fought. Is this a big ask for Sinead?
Yeah, I think it's a huge, huge ask, especially, obviously, you know, what I think she lost 3 of her last 4 fights.
Yeah, something like that.
I think Leslie was on a 2-fight winning streak when she left the UFC, when her contract ran out, expired.
Well, it wasn't that, if you remember. She was meant to fight Aspen Ladd.
That's right.
And then something happened that weekend, and then they were just like, let's just terminate your contract.
Yeah.
So, they don't like Project Spearhead, and she is heavily involved with them.
Exactly. they didn't like that. But listen, Leslie Smith, we know her skills, you know, very good in the feet, great in the ground.
And just tough as an old boot.
Jesus. Tough as nails. And I worry for Sinead in this fight. Really good stand-up. Obviously, we've seen Sinead's boxing. But, you know, I think Leslie might be a little bit too crafty for her here. And it's an interesting one with Bellator doing here. It's like it's sort of shit or get off the pot maybe for Sinead. Because of obviously losing three of her last four fights. Leslie Smith's on a two-fight win streak. It's sort of, you know, if Leslie wins, it elevates her up. And if Sinead wins,
On
the flip side, it's, you know, a massive risk-reward fight for her.
One thing I will say to you about this, and this applies to Kiefer and Will Fleury, who we'll be hearing from later on as well. These fights are going to be very important in terms of what happens in Dublin. I mean, if people come away from these fights with a bad injury, it's out of the question. You're not going to be fighting in September, you know?
Yeah, and I think, you know, for Kiefer, obviously, you know...
We'll just say Kiefer's fighting Jonathan Gary, a guy who's 13, 12. 11 and 2. I think he has a mixed record in Bellator. I think he's like 2-2, but he's scattered, you know, like he's fought here and there. You know, on paper, you're looking at it straight away. And as I say often with Kiefer, when they match him, they're nearly giving him this situation where you got to win well to have people really impressed. And that's a tough situation to be putting a prospect in every time, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And
like, say if it was another guy that was 6-0, you'd be like, well, this could be a very close fight, you know?
Yeah, like, but the thing we have to ask again now is, you know, are they planning something big for Kiefer going down the line? Because he's had fights where we're expecting him to win this fight. Every fight he's had on paper, his last number of fights, especially under the Bellator banner, we've expected him to win, and he's won.
I think that's a hard thing to do to a prospect. I really do, because it's this constant pressure, like, where you have to not only win, but be impressive when you're putting them against guys like that.
Well, yeah, he should be, no? Rightly so.
Yeah, but it's tough as well. This guy's fought 25 times, and Kiefer's fought 6, you know?
Yeah, no, yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah, no, maybe it's a test, you know, Bellator, with a certain guys, they do push them slowly, and, you know, I've no problem wrong with that, but I think if he wins this and wins this in impressive fashion, we're going to have to look at something. Obviously, as you said there, if he stays injury-free, we're going to have to look at something big for the Dublin card, because, you know, how long can this go on? He's a popular guy, you know.
Huge.
Anything you put on social with Kiefer, massive traction, so... You know, a big win in the States. I think it's sensible from Kiefer as well. You know, marketing-wise, he said, you know, he wanted to fight in the States. He's calling for a 160-pound division as well. Obviously, you think it's a little bit too soon in his career.
He's 165 in this one, though, you know.
But yeah, you know, it is interesting that they're doing that. So, I think it's a good ploy to go over and fight there and get his brand out there and his name out there in the US market. An impressive win, you know, it set up something nicely maybe for Dublin, as you said.
Yeah, Will Fleury takes on Antonio Doomsday Jones, a man who lost to Sheboygan on the Contender Series.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, 7-2, a tough fight for Will, who's 5-1. And again, you know, I feel like Will got a massive pop off that Dublin event. Like, I feel like when you're talking about someone like Kiefer, he was always a well-known commodity. A lot of people are going there that night to see Kiefer fight.
Yeah.
Whereas Will came in and a lot of people were going, who's that crazy guy with the goddamn wall, the handlebar mustache?
And Mattress Mick floating around him as well.
Yeah,
don't
like
forget
that's, I was actually said to Will when I interviewed him. But when I think about that event, that's the first thing that pops into my head. Him and Mattress
Mickey. I
was starstruck, man.
Yeah. No, but I think as well for Will, you have to understand, Will is a very sensible lad in terms of actually reaching out to the media. He wants to do things. He wants to engage with the media. I think that's very important.
Very aware of his brand.
Very aware. And as we always say, a lot of guys aren't aware of their brand and how to treat us as journalists and guys who cover this sport. Will has that down to a T and a fine art. He's reaching out to people. He's trying to make things happen. And I think that's very important. And let's be honest, you know, his last fight, he was very impressive in his last fight. You know, a step up an opponent. And I think this is, again, another step up an opponent. So Will is going about this the right way.
I asked Will about that. I said a lot of the criticism in terms of how SBG are being matched is the fact that a lot of people don't feel like they're getting challenges. But you can't say that about Will.
I put a tweet up about that, about the Bellator card. Will liked it. And you can't say that about Will, because there's been a solid step up on his opponents the whole time. Even after he lost, he fought a better level opponent.
Yeah, he's so an interesting cat, man. Like, I mean,
born in South Africa, isn't he?
He's born in Tipperary, no?
I think he's born. I think his family.
He moved to South Dublin though when he was very young.
Yeah.
So
like school up the road down there, Wesley College.
Managed to avoid all the traps of South Dublin, like yeah, the ones that you fell right
the
one into.
The hoodlums yeah. around here.
Yeah. But he's a really interesting guy. I don't know if you listened to Paddy Hoolan's podcast with him.
Recent.
It's really good, man. Like, and it's a longer form interview where a lot more can be said and stuff like that. Now, don't get me wrong, he gave me a great interview, but just a really, really complex. Dude, lots going on, and I've always found him really interesting. You know, like always have. But he's just, I feel like this could be a big one if he gets this done against Doomsday. It should be a big fight for him in Dublin. But I guess with middleweight, it's tough. You know, you don't have as many guys floating around that you're automatically like when you think of Bellator middleweights, you're going Fabian Edwards. You know what I mean? Like
that's it. Yeah,
you know, it's a crazy situation.
You really are. Listen. That could be something down the line as well. Yeah, don't write that offer. Yeah. For, like maybe even Dublin.
Absolutely. You know? Like I mean, I think people would be interested in that. But yeah, three big fights for the SBGers over there. A big night for them, without a doubt. I believe there is one other European yet. Elena Kaliandou. Is that Greece?
Yeah.
How do you pronounce that name? Kaliandou.
Hang on, how did he duo? Pronounce it? That is a weird one. She's
only 20
one.
Years of age and 7-2. That is quite a good
one. Elena Calandio.
Yeah. There you go. Right. Pronounced perfectly by Niall. Yeah. She's also in action at 125 against Bruno Ellen. And Olga Rubin in the main event represents Israel against Julia Budd. Israel? Why are we? Israel isn't Europe.
No,
is
no, no.
They're in the Eurovision now.
Yeah, there's some things like they're in UEFA and stuff like that, but they're technically Asia as far as I'm aware.
Well, there you go. Cut her from the record. Let the record show that Olga is not representing Eurobash. No.
She fought in Dublin here. They seem to be giving Olga a big, big push.
Yeah, yeah, they are. Yeah,
she looked. She did look good. But yeah, Julia Budd as well. It's, you know, that's a good high caliber fight.
It's a big step up, all right.
Yeah,
definitely. So I mean,
are you? You know, when we look at this, and you know, is it a good thing? Do you feel these lads fighting overseas and, you know, getting a bit of brand exposure in the US? I know Sinead has already, but for Kiefer and Will, I think it is. It's something, you know, and they're both good shit talkers as well.
Good experience for them.
And they're good in the mic. If they get big wins and jump out in the mic and say something, you know, it is.
They're memorable cats. The two of them are, you know. Even Sinead is, like, when Sinead is on song, she's really, really impressive. But I just think that's a very tough fight. Yeah. But again, as you say, risk reward. Yeah. If she ends up coming away with her hand raised, huge. We've got a few Europeans in action on Saturday night, I believe. Is it Saturday night?
Yeah, UFC card, yeah, it is.
Yeah, big L card there, and it's topped by Jermaine Duranemi of Holland, of course. I like this fight. Like, I mean, it is interesting. Like, I remember there was a lot of controversy around it. Like, is this good enough to be a main event of a card? It might not be, but certainly interesting with Aspen Ladd undefeated against Duranemi, who's been a spoiler in her career before, you know. What way do you see that going? Like, I feel like they've got big advantages in their weak areas. You know, like, obviously, you're going to be looking at Jermaine Durandamy as way better striking than Aspen Ladd, but Aspen Ladd's like a blanket when she's on top of you, you know?
Aspen Ladd is your prime example. She's like a Rory McDonald-type specimen of the women's division in terms of that she is your complete all-round mixed martial arts. She trains martial arts. She's one of that younger generation that have come through like that, learned, you know, tricks from everywhere. She's a jack of all trades, and she's really good stand-up as well, man. But obviously, known Jermaine Durandamy, you know, her kickboxing background, absolutely fantastic fighter, on a 4-fight win streak, I believe it is, as well. So, like, you know, former UFC featherweight champion, got stripped, never actually lost the title in combat. So it is. It's a tough one for Aspen Ladd, but it's maybe a little bit like, they're going, right, Aspen Ladd is this good. She's this young. We've seen her Invicta. She's come through, you know, flying colours in her first few UFC fights. She was obviously supposed to fight Holly Holm. That fight fell out. So she's been put into this event against, Jermaine Durandamy. So I feel this one is another one a little bit like that from the UFC's point of view, where they're going, right, if Jermaine Durandamy wins this fight, she's 5 straight. Maybe let's have a little look at her and Nunes, potentially. And then if Aspen Ladd wins, we have a young up-and-coming lady here who's proven she can take out the big guns in the division and a really, really big name in Jermaine Durandamy. And she's like going to get this push up towards that sort of level of stardom as well. So I think it opens up options for the UFC as well, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Uruiah Faber makes his return in the co-main event.
That's a tough fight for Uruiah, man.
Yeah,
Ricky Simone's class.
I don't really see the point in him coming back. You know,
I don't.
I just don't.
It's just a hunger, man. Some of these guys just can't step away. And I think even when Uriah,
he's been away for a long time, you know. Yeah. Like that's what I can't really get over. And he seems to be like, you know, a big part in a lot of young guys' careers, like Yadong Song that we mentioned earlier. Course. Like he's in his corner. You know, even Sage Norcutt, guys like this, and now he's coming back. It's like, do you need to do this, man? You know what I mean? That's the way I'm looking at it anyway.
He doesn't at all, but if he's one of these guys, man, that I just don't think I think he's so obviously involved in the sport from a day-to-day basis with likes of the guys you said, Cody.
So he's
Garbrandt
like, I may
as well
be fighting.
generally, that's what I was literally about to say. I might as well be fighting. And it's very hard to step away from that, the competitive edge.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, that's what he is. But listen, man, I don't like this fight for him either. I think, you know, Ricky Simone's a guy that I've seen when he was in his time with, I think, Titan FC as well. Mm. And I think it was Ronnie Yahya he's coming off a win against. Is that correct? I'll just check that now. Yes, Ronnie Yahya at UFC 234 in Melbourne. So, yeah, he lost the fight? He's lost one fight, you know, on I think 8-fight win streak or something like that.
Certainly
so.
Not a gimme. Most interested in Josh MFV Mirsad Bektić Eurobone, Bosnia, the fighting pro.
What a
Bosnia.
Fighter, yeah.
Obviously, he's back to action now. He had to pull out of that pivotal fight there earlier this year. We were talking to him beforehand. What fight was that? He had a big fight.
Who?
Mirsad, and he had to pull out of it. Renato Moicano.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was last year. That was in December of last year. Holy shit. And like you've said this before about Mirsad. That's his one thing. It's like he's injured a lot. And it's from that wrestling. So you know, when you've been wrestling your whole life, your body's in tatters.
He's a dogged wrestler, man. The guy's a beast. But yeah, that's really been the frustrating thing for Mirsad Bektić. For Mirsad, like,
he's only had one loss, that crazy fight with Elkins.
Yeah, that was the only fight. And he was dominating that fight up until that point. And listen, Elkins just pulled that fight out of the bloody bag to win that. You know, this is, you know, if you look at his record and you look at the lack of fights that he's had over his period of time in the promotion, there's been real no level of consistency getting 3-4 fights in a year. I think last year was probably his best year where he's got 2 in, and that's the first time he's got in 2 since the Paul Redmond fight, which is, you know, quite a long way back as far as I'm aware. Yeah,
2015.
Was it 15? Was it all right? Okay, so yeah, like that's fucking crazy, man. And you want to make a push in the division, like the featherweight division, you need to be fighting more often than that.
But that's a good man to fight Josh Emmett. That's a big name in that division. It is. And Josh Emmett obviously got back to winning ways Michael after Johnson. That devastating knockout he suffered to Jeremy Stevens. He knocked out Johnson. It's a pivotal fight for that division, I feel.
Massively. And I think, you know, you've a contender emerging here, and more likely at the moment in the division the way it's gone. We obviously have the fight book between Frankie Edgar and Max Holloway, but this one is the winner of this, man, you know, they're not far off, maybe one more fight away probably from getting a title shot. So there's a lot on the line here. I think a lot for Bektić as well.
Marvin Vettori will be back in action for the first time since that USADA suspension. You'll remember Marvin was on the show a while ago speaking to us about that. He was one of those four names that basically USADA struck from the record. Basically to say, like, these guys have been tainted. Massive stumbling block in his career for such a young man from Italy, of course. But no jokes, straight up, he's in there against Cesar Ferreira on the way back. So that is a big, big fight for him too. And I feel like, you know, Marvin did well against Adesanya. A lot of people forget that. Like, I mean, I still see Italian reporters going, "Don't at me, Marvin Vettori bet Israel Adesanya." Yeah. Like, it was a very close fight.
Well, like, people
probably gave him the best go next to Calvin Gastelum.
No, easily. Yeah, he's about to say that to you. Like, in terms of that fight, you know, there was a lot of people. There was a bit of a backlash towards Israel Adesanya fight.
It's amazing to see how far he's come. Really.
It is. It really is crazy.
It's only his second fight in the UFC, I believe.
Yeah, it was. And he was, obviously, you know, we thought, you know, give the guy a break. He took you know, got a victory over a tough guy like Martin Vettori, and obviously not his best performance in the world, but like Martin hung in there actually in that fight. Or Marvin, sorry, Marvin.
Jesus Christ.
Starving Marvin.
He's definitely not starving, man. He is henched, that man. But looking through the card here, Juliana Pena versus Nico Montana. Very interested to see Nico returning. She was one of the four names as well.
That's a huge fight, man, in that division.
What about Ryan Hall against Darren Elkins?
Ryan Hall, who fights once in every 5 years.
But Darren Elkins and Ryan Hall is on the undercard of this.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. It doesn't really matter because they're both on the same channel. Like,
nothing really matters.
That is a really high-level fight, and it's a good fight. You know, it's good to see that Ryan's going to get some. That's two fights in a year. Is that right? Did he fight BJ Penn this year? Holy God.
Calm down, Ryan. Jesus, he did himself an injury.
He didn't fight from 2016 before that. So listen, now Ryan's obviously an excellent elite level jiu-jitsu guy, and you'd have to sort of favour him in this one, I think.
Yeah, you definitely have.
Like,
to.
Man, if he can pull off that shit, like, you know, just get anyone to the ground, you're fucking deep trouble with this guy. And listen, Darren Elkins is a beast of a man, but when Ryan takes you to the ground, he might be breaking your legs. He mightn't be able to get back up, and I think that could be possibly the outcome on Saturday night.
I'd say he's probably watched a lot of my footage from back in the day.
Probably the floating seal jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, it's obvious when you see
standard. We're getting that, bringing that back, by the way. Yeah, I'm going to start marketing for him. We're gonna fuck shit up.
You have me battered by fucking somebody.
I'm
going
to sell it
fight.
To everyone, and then we're going to. What's going to happen is they're going to want to do a show. It's going to be like fucking Cobra Kai, if you've watched any of that, and on YouTube. I'd highly recommend it, by the way. It's class. Have you ever seen it? Yeah,
brilliant.
That's deadly.
Real fucking, cheesy. I love it.
Cheesy is brilliant. But the Karate Kid was a nasty piece of work.
Well, look,
Danny, what's his name? The Karate Kid, the original guy. What's his name? Danny LaRusso.
Yes. There you go. Right. Well, let's move on to the
fucking brain.
Let's move on to the third interview of the day. It's the man I told you about already. It's Will Fleury. Great to speak to Will. Is this his Eurobash debut, actually, is it?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Too long we've been waiting on that man. Great to speak to him. He's a great lad, and I'm looking forward to seeing him fight this weekend. One of three SBG fighters that goes to Thackerville looking for a win. So we'll speak to Will, and we'll be back in about 15 to talk some Brown. And now we are finally joined by the raw bastard himself, Will fucking Fleury, one of the greatest ring names in all of the sport. Will, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. Very good, man.
That sounds like a very low beat good to me. You're usually pumped up full of it. Is it just all the travel that's ahead of you? You're taking off tomorrow, right?
I am indeed, yeah. Tomorrow morning at 7:10. So I'll be in the airport for about 4:30.
Oh, lovely.
Should be lovely. I'm calm and ready to kill, basically. Like, you know, calm and kind of at peace with the fact that we're going to war now. So just trying to chill out a little bit. I've been very excited now the last week or so since this has all been announced and kind of been building up. It's obviously a huge opportunity ahead of me, so pumped, but trying to keep myself pretty chill for now.
Yes, and of course, you're going to be taking on Antonio Jones in Thackerville on Friday at that Bellator 224 card. And yeah, just as you said there, Will, this kind of came about quite late. I mean, we got to know about it quite late, quite close to the fight date. Have you just been, were you told basically prepare for this date and you had a full camp? It was just the opponent that came later?
It was kind of vague information. So first off, I was told you might get London, and I started preparing for London. And then it was, if we don't get you on London, you might get a pullout slot. If there's a pullout, you're our first guy. And then it became, look, July 12th, you're definitely on that. And they had an opponent. Then they didn't have an opponent. So even the Americans bitch out on Will Fleury. But and then this guy only got confirmed 2-3 weeks ago. So it's a 190 catch weight for him. Instead of a 185, because he's a fat fuck, obviously, and can't make the weight. But, it's only been confirmed and solidified in the last 2.5 weeks, but it's been on the cards for about 10 weeks.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Will. Is this your U.S. debut? Because I know you fought all over the place, but is this the first time you're going to be competing on U.S. soil, or am I mistaken?
Yeah, first time in America, man. And it's big to me. Like, I know I've been a few places. Like, I've been down in South Africa and Jordan and whatever, but, like, America is different. It's special, like, you know, and I feel like it's a huge opportunity for me now.
Yeah, it's this catchweight. I just noticed, obviously, you're not speaking about your opponent in glowing terms there. Is that annoying? I was there for your last fight in Dublin when your opponent missed weight and you were pissed off. Like, I mean, there was a bit of a back and forth in the hall. You were talking to the media there.
At least this fat con said he's going to come in as a fat fuck. Like,
that sort of prior warning is
like, you know, he doesn't have me starving myself and then showing up like, oh no, I'm 5 pounds over or whatever. I don't mind. Look, it's grand. It just means I can eat a little bit better for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not that much of an ordeal once you know in advance.
Nah,
basically.
Like, look, at least he gave us a heads up this time. That's grand.
Absolutely. Now, I've got to say,
I'm only taking the piss out of him, calling him a fat cunt as well. Like, look, you know, he's a half decent fighter. He can show up and he can do his damage. Like, and he's got to be respected. Like,
Right. I've got to say, Will, there was some complaints, right, about how the SPG fighters are being matched, but definitely not towards you. When you look at the fights you've taken on since you signed for Bellator, these are really good opponents. They've got good records. I mean, do you feel as though that's warranted, what people are saying about some of your teammates, that maybe they aren't getting the big tests compared to you anyway?
Well, man, look, all I can do is beat the crap out of whoever's in front of me, and I want to be the best, you know, in my division. And you don't get to that point without beating high quality guys. So every time I'm asked, oh, like, what do you want? I'm like, get me the best guy you can get me. And that is the genuine fucking answer. A lot of people are out there saying, oh, I want to fight this guy. I don't refuse anybody. I genuinely don't. I want like high level competition. I want to get in against the best guys, see what I can do against them. I believe I'm fucking extremely good at this. I've proved to myself, you know, plenty of times that I am extremely good at this. So give me the chance to show that. I want the chance to show that on a big stage. And this is the opportunity I have now next Friday. So it's about, I suppose, you know, me just focusing on me and smashing what's in front of me every time. Like,
yeah, and I got to say, most people might know Antonio just from his appearance on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. That would have been his most prominent appearance internationally so far. But what have you learned about this guy on such short notice? Do you spend a lot of time on that when this is kind of dropped on you at the 11th
hour?
Yeah,
I've had a good look at him. Like, it's generally speaking, the last 2-3 weeks I do my major research anyway, because up to that point, you don't know if this guy's going to show up. I've had more guys not show up than I have show up. So, like, it's kind of pointless doing research on somebody 8 weeks out and then boom, it's a totally different guy on the day. And that, like, I didn't look at the first guy, the Simone guy that I got offered, until like a week before he pulled out. So I was doing a week of kind of drilling and researching him. Then this guy Antonio came on board and I was like, okay, this guy's probably going to show up. He's taking a short notice. He's not going to take a short notice and pull out. So I've had a good look off him, yeah. And like, he was Fury FC champion. He's legit. He's got a big overhand and he's got a half decent set. But like, look, I've been training for 9 years, man. I'm a quality martial artist and I want to get in there and prove that. So I'm going to pick Antonio apart and make a show of it. Like,
the one thing that I'm thinking about here as you go into this is, what happens with the Dublin card? September 27th, you had a huge performance last time. We had that brilliant moment with Mattress Mick backstage. I love that. No, but it was great, you know? It's just one of those things.
Yeah, quality,
it sticks in my head. As soon as I think about that card, I think about you two guys backstage. And, you know, a lot of people are getting behind you. Is there a worry that, like, you know, you could pick up a knock here and maybe not compete on that September 27th card? I mean, it is quite close, right?
Yeah, and look, I'm not God. I don't dictate these things.
Are you sure?
Close enough. But I'm getting there, Vici. I'm getting there. Give me some time, all right? I've got Jesus status right now. You know, I'm waiting for the God card to arrive.
Look at us blaspheming on the podcast. This is fantastic.
But basically, look, it's a risk I'm willing to take. And like, I think you have to get out there and you have to try and like be active, as active as you can. I don't want to fight twice a year. Like, and if, say, something terrible does happen, let's say I fucking smash Antonio and break my hand off him and, you know, I can't fight in Dublin, I'd still rather have done it this way than not taking my chances, man. This is the game we're in. Like, you know, there's risk involved in everything we do, you know, so get in there and keep risking, keep putting your balls in the line and keep going for it. Like, and that's what I'm doing. So, like, look, man, like, I just feel like something special is going on in my head at the moment where I'm just like, I'm up for everything. I feel like every challenge is one I can smash. So let's get Antonio in front of me. Let's see what I can do with him. And then afterwards, I'll have a few names in my mind and hopefully we'll get them over to Dublin.
Yeah, and I got to respect that that attitude, Will, completely. And yeah, I was just thinking about that. Like, this could pay off a lot as well. If you go over there and get a viral stoppage or you have a performance that gains a lot of traction, that can parlay into an even bigger matchup in Dublin, obviously. Is that the way you're thinking about it?
Yeah, like, look, I think there is a recognition out there that if you're looking for legit fighters, Will Fleury's your guy, like. And even like you look at the reaction of the crowd in Dublin that night.
Amazing.
I was pretty overwhelmed by it. Like, it was great. It was fucking, you know, like they're putting me like fifth fight on the prelims and you're kind of thinking, oh, they must think I'm a fucking bum or something. And then you come out and you get this, like, you know, you get a huge reception off the crowd. You go and you beat probably the most legit fighter, or like the most legit opponent anybody had on that card. And you beat them like that. So I'm expecting to be a little bit higher up the card. And to be honest, man, even if I'm not, just put somebody legit in front of me and watch me smash him again and watch me keep doing that. And then we'll see where I am. Like,
yes, yes. And as you said, the Dublin crowd was something I only learned about you recently was the fact you went to school in South Dublin, right? I heard you on Paddy Hoolan's No Shame podcast. And for any of you guys that are interested in Will or Irish fighters, you got to check this episode out. Amazing to hear you speaking in that kind of open environment, Will. It seems like mentally you're switched on a completely different level now. When I hear about the way you think and the way you look at this game, I have to say I was really impressed, and it's a really original way to look at things, I have to say. Is that something new? Is that something
new? I don't think so at all. Like, I think, like, I've been like this for a long time, man. And, like, again, character is not a fixed thing, you know. You work for who you are every day of the week. But, like, I think by overcoming adversity on a regular basis, you kind of develop a level of, like, I don't know, just grit and character. You know, there's something deeper in there, and you kind of know fundamentally what you are and how you react to things. And over the last kind of 5 years, I suppose, I've just been, look, if I get the chance, I will smash the chance. And the one really disappointing thing, I suppose, was Rome, because Rome was my big chance. And I let that fucking slip away from me by having a shit attitude on the night and by just being a little bit complacent. Like, honestly, I feel like I've been a world beater for about 5-6 years. It's on me to get out and prove that now. I have the opportunity again. I obviously smashed that opportunity in Dublin. That was fantastic. But still, I let it slip once. I really, really don't want to let that slip again. And I feel like this time around, I am a little bit more, I suppose, vicious isn't the word really, but like, there's definitely an awareness. Like, I'd never known what it felt like to be the guy with your head hung low the morning after. Mm. Whereas now I know what that feeling is. And I never, ever want to be there again. So there's kind of an awareness of what the reality of this game can be. And I think that's going to just, you know, make me that little bit more primal on the night. And that, like, I've carried that attitude from fear into fights, as in the fear has made me like that primal guy. That night in Rome, I just felt like, you're a better fighter. You're going to get in and smash this guy regardless. And there wasn't that level of like, you need to get rid of this guy because he could fuck you. Right. Whereas now, look, Antonio Jones is a legit threat. I know this guy could be getting the better of me on that night. But I'm not going to fucking let that happen, man. I've worked way too hard to let that happen. So, yeah, like, look, it's just, like, the mentality towards fighting, it's something that'll develop over time by putting yourself in tough situations and getting your ass whooped a few times. Like, I was over in London Shoot getting my ass whooped for years, like, and I think it did me the world of good, to be honest, like, because you go through sparring sessions, like we wouldn't even know what day we were sparring over there sometimes. Like, you just get called off the mats and you're in the cage with MVP. Jesus. And you're surviving as best you can. Like, but I do, like, I really think, like, I can't thank those guys enough for that stuff. Even though at the time I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, it just gives you a kind of a level of self-respect and a level of mental hardness that I feel like now I can reap the rewards for that. Like, and I have a long time left in this game, man. And look, Bellator provided a platform for us, and I think it's fantastic. Like, we're going to get to fight in Dublin again this year, hopefully twice next year as well. I'm hoping to get a fight in December as well. This whole thing feels like a massive opportunity now, and I'm the guy to take that opportunity.
Do you think, you might have talked to Paddy about this, but I was kind of thinking, like, the fact that you are kind of pulled out of your environment and thrown into South Dublin, the craziest place in the world, as a Northsider, I have to say that. But when you go over there, I mean, do you find that allowed you to kind of relish being uncomfortable? Like, you're able to thrive in those kind of environments because it's been happening to you since you're so young.
Yeah, and look, I've lived in, I think it's 38 different houses in the last 10 years.
Fuck.
So, like,
that's insane, man.
It is mental. Like, I go on Amazon to buy something, and the amount of suggestive addresses that come up is ridiculous. I've never really had a settled environment. I've given up a lot of things in my life to follow, like, this passion of mine and pursue this sport and, you know, embrace challenge. And at times, like, it's been pretty grim. Like, I've been in tough situations financially, and I've been in tough situations, like, emotionally as well, with things I've had. Like, I've had to leave a girlfriend in London 5 years ago as well to pursue all this. And, you know, it's been a mad journey. But, like, I think, having that sort of, like, even, like, non-fighting based adversity, is really good for your character in a way, because you constantly have to assess, like, look, this is what you want out of this. Is it worth that much to you? And then be logical about that as well and say, like, okay, why am I pursuing this so much? But I've always felt like, look, you're a better man for doing all of this. You're a better man for trying to get in and put, like, embrace that challenge and fight another guy across the gate, you know? And I was doing this when it was 200 quid or 300 quid being offered, like, so. Now I'm just delighted that it's proper money and I can pay my rent and my gaff, and I can, you know, I can be like, okay, I'll be here for the next 6 months. I'll be here for the next 8 months. But, you know, it's still like, it's fresh in my memory, all of that stuff, man. And it's not too far from where I'm happening again. If you don't, like, if I let this slip, you might be straight back to that sort of crap. And I don't want to be there again, man. So, yeah, like, I suppose it's real. Like, it's raw, this whole thing. And that's why I'm the raw bastard.
That's an amazing story, man. It really is. It feels like you're like an onion. The more we peel back these layers, Will, the more we learn. What a metaphor for me, by the way.
I think everybody has a character, like, as in, you know, there's a reason why anybody's involved in this sport. And it's general, like, you don't get here by being normal, like. And the situations that occur to make anyone a fighter are probably pretty interesting, like.
Mm.
And I think most guys, like, it's how comfortable you are revealing that stuff. And, like, oh, I don't want to get too deep into my personal life and all the shit that's happening. I've probably even just gone a bit too fucking mad being like,
no, this
oh,
is great.
Over the girl over in London, like, and this she might brilliant. Even listen to this, and then it's awkward as fuck, and she might text me or whatever. But, you know,
I'm loving it.
Yeah, like, it's just, I suppose, yeah, be comfortable with what you are and be comfortable with yourself, I suppose.
Absolutely. I got one final one for you, Will. Like, I mean, you know, you said there, it seems to me that you're a guy that has a clear roadmap in his head. Like, you're talking about these dates. I want to fight in December. We're going to have a fight. I want to fight in Dublin. I want to fight in Dublin two times next year. Like, are you thinking about a certain person? Like, do you have a name on the tip of your tongue that you would like to call for that hometown card?
I do indeed, but I'll save that for Friday night.
Really? Yeah. Do you think it's going to be one that resonates with the fan base anyway? You think people will be excited about it?
I hope so. Now, look, this is the thing. It depends how I smash Antonio. And I have a couple of options in my own mind anyway.
So if you submit him, it's going to be one guy. If you knock him out, it's going to be another guy. This is very interesting.
Kind of.
Wow. Yeah. I've never heard of this before.
Yeah. Like, I think it just, like, the story works better in different ways then. So we'll see. Like, look, I'll tell you all about it afterwards.
That's brilliant, man. I'm looking forward to this. Now, that's even it's a new level of intrigue again. But that's great, Will. And best luck to you, Kiefer and Sinead, who are all fighting on that card. And absolute pleasure to speak to you, my friend.
Cheers, man. Thanks, man.
All the best. Bye-bye. And we are back. What a week of interviews. What another brilliant show we have. Unbelievable.
Shit.
We're just the best ever. Thanks very much to Will Fleury. Very entertaining guy, man, as I said. Thoroughly enjoyed that. I could have talked to him for an hour more, to be honest.
But what did he say after Dublin? I'm the best fucking middleweight.
And the intensity of the facial hair really speaks to me in those moments, because I couldn't grow a piece that fucking beautiful. There's no patches in that shit.
Listen, I could, mate, so I'm not going to...
You couldn't grow one as strong as Will.
Oh, you fucking taking the piss.
I can see bits here. Mate. There's no way you could grow 100%. Something like that.
100%. Like, look at me. Oh, this is like no, after this part here, this is like 2 weeks.
You've weak around the end of the
fuck
mustaches.
Off,
you're a bit weak with that. But Jesus. Look, I just have a high opinion when it comes to facial hair. But yeah, well, that's the end of the show, Noel. Can I just pull you up on something you said while we weren't recording that kind of stuck out to me? This is the second time in a number of weeks that you have referenced Love Island when you're speaking to me. What in the name of God are you watching that show for?
Why am I watching it?
He hasn't even thought about this until now.
I haven't, no. You've got me off guard here. We don't listen. When do we ever really talk about shit bar fights?
In the last segment of Eurobash every week.
That is, so I didn't think you'd throw the old LI at me, but...
Yeah, I mean, like, I told my missus... I'll tell you why I watch it. I told Elaine, I was like, Noel watches shit, Love Island.
It's fucking crap, and it's good TV. It's just interesting. I'll probably watch it for Lucy alone.
Don't know who any of these people are.
Lucy is just unbelievably hot.
Bloke?
No.
Oh, sorry.
What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Right,
so if anyone wants to get this sort of vibe going, that, like, I'm looking for a few dates for weddings that are coming up. So you can just bang it out there. If Lucy gets fucked out of Love Island, she can come to a wedding with me, and we'll hook that up. So someone get that tweet going. I'm too shy to put it out there, but someone wants to tag Lucy in it and make it go viral. Cool, yeah, I'm all down for that shit.
We can all do that. There's no problem with that.
Yeah, work away, do it, please.
But I just had to bring that up to you. I was a bit shocked by that. You know, would you say that watching Love Island goes hand in hand with being on Tinder? Like, it's kind of like one of these things.
She talks some shit.
Because I think your type of girl is an Instagram model.
We need this shit in video. Like, if people see you're a smug little fucking grin in the corner there. Love's putting a shtick in the El Pot to stir it.
He's definitely, his type is Instagram model. That's what I'd say Niall's type is.
Yeah.
Is that fair enough?
I'm not going to lie. Yeah, you are right.
Shoot high.
Like, I am, right, your standard
Instagram male model.
I'm your, like, third division Sunday league fucking team. And as I've always said, and people, this is an original Niall McGrath line. What happens in the FA Cup the odd time, Peter? You get a cup shock. So I'm one of those guys that I could be, like, you know, Bath FC football club, and you might get the odd shock against Premier League opposition, the likes of Huddersfield or something like that. So, yeah.
I love it.
It does happen.
I love that.
It does happen.
That's brilliant. I never thought about it that way.
I'm a cup shocker. That's what I say. I've had one or two in there. You know, if a shock, you go, what? He's like, what? No way. Amazing. That happened, yeah.
But yeah. Who, like, do you, is Tyson Fury's brother going to win it? He's very handsome.
Well, they're sort of.
He's a good looking lad.
He is. You'd have a dope,
though. I haven't watched it, but.
He's not the sharpest tail in the box, but.
I saw a picture of him. Elaine showed me a picture of him half naked, and I was like, well, looks a bit like myself.
Listen, you're definitely watching the show if Elaine's watching the show.
No, she hasn't. She doesn't watch it. She watches it when I do the show on Mondays. Yeah, that's when she watches it.
Yeah, I wouldn't say Elaine would be a man fucking Love Island.
I think if I wasn't in the scene, like, I think in an alternate universe where you and Elaine are going out with each other, you're watching it every night.
It's trash TV. Like, it's rubbish. It's just. But,
Elaine watches like the Kardashians to turn her brain off. It's like she's not even watching the TV.
You know what
it's
I am? On. I'll tell you what they do. Their fucking camera work is absolutely fabulous.
Is it?
Yeah, I watch it and I'm going, well, how
see, that's what he's doing. He's studying the game.
But that's what I do. Even when I'm watching TV.
Don't you just avoid
this? I did an interview with Paul Redman last week and my fucking. The sound isn't atrocious by any means, but the sound wasn't great off the Zoom. There's a crack in the side of my Zoom and it's been.
Do you want to get me up to do a sound for you next time?
Yeah, I will. But it's been really annoying me and I just don't have the money to buy a feckin' new one because they're 500 quid. But. It's just, it really annoyed me. It was grand, like, but, you know, I actually watch TV, like, that's the weird thing. I'd be watching, I go, that camera shot is shit. Like, I think like that, which is mad. And I wouldn't have thought like that years ago.
I don't have a highbrow for that kind of stuff,
but it's just weird. But no, I watch it solely for the camera angle, Speedy.
Well, that makes sense. It makes sense.
How was your weekend? Speaking of the mic, please.
Oh yeah, it's good. Just working all the time as usual.
Had a busy weekend. Saturday night. Saturday.
Every
was
day
tough.
Is busy. There's no days off.
Yeah, Saturday was tough.
It's that kind of world. But
yeah, that thing coming out with Paul soon. So
yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah,
man.
It was 30 minutes. Just we sort of went through Everton, like, as in terms of, you know, his career, and then obviously talked about Dublin and stuff like that, and, you know. Typical Paul, humble as always, you know, oh, I don't know about the main. People want to see this guy in the main card. And I think it's very important that he gets the recognition now. Because, let's be honest, if Paul's 33, 34, like he is, he's getting to the
well, do you know what? Bellator needs to learn from the criticisms of the force card. Yeah. Like, it's not that hard. And look, I think they have. From what you've said, like, these fighters are being matched in more competitive bouts.
Yeah.
And, like, I think I agree with that much straight away. So I do, maybe they are going to learn and they are going to put Reds are rightfully on
the main. Can I bring up something? And it was just something that happened on Saturday in terms of having a little bit of chat on Twitter with a couple of people. And, you know, in terms of the Irish scene, you know, what are we to do here in terms of, there's one show that's coming here the whole time. And it really is getting to a point now, you know, with Paul Hughes, who'd 9 pullouts, can't get a fight. Titan FC actually offered him a fight, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
And there was something, obviously, I don't think the money was right or whatever, in some situations. But Paul has to look to go over to the US. The guy is 2-0. You know, what's going on here, Petey?
The scene has been kind of hindered by the amount of the restrictions that are put in place. There's restrictions on everything. It's very expensive to put on an event there. And I think something that underlines that is the fact that John Kavanagh is putting on an event in Manchester in October. This is the head of IMA. And a lot of people are annoyed about that. Like, I got a lot of phone calls that week.
It didn't even
register with me, really, until people started calling me about it. You know, you'd have to pick John's brain about that. I haven't spoke to him about it. But look, I've said this many, many times. we wanted to report on this. Several blockages were put in our way. Yeah. It's very hard to sell a publication on this idea, given the lack of back and forth we were given the first time around. And that, look, they want that coverage, but very hard to cover this properly now, given my time away from it.
Well, where are Bellator getting the money then to put on these shows?
They have bottomless bit of money. They have Viacom there, you know what I mean?
Well, like, you know, would the UFC not take a hit and do it, or you know, well,
I think they were going to do it last year, but they didn't realize the situation was going down. And then when they went to book it, they were kind of like, well, this is going to take a lot more logistically than we thought of. We could just go to Liverpool, yeah. And that made perfect sense at the time with Darren Till. So, I mean, like, that's going to be an hindrance to promotions coming here. Like, I can remember KSW had some issues when they came over here, like, they spent a lot of money putting on an event here, and then, you know, there was several late notice pullouts and stuff like
that. Cage Warriors card was demolished overnight.
Like, it's very tough. And it isn't what it used to be. Like, this is the main thing I always say about it. We have those legendary nights in Irish MMA, and, you know, that was kind of the end work of years and years of hard work on our regional scene. But the regional scene that created Neil Seary, Conor McGregor, Carl Pendred, Paddy Hulin, Chris Fields, Ashing Daly, Owen Ruddy, all these guys, and many, many more of them, that scene isn't there anymore. And that's a big problem. And that's a big problem for kids who are starting off in the sport over here. Something needs to be addressed there. There needs to be regional events put on. When Cole and Paddy and everything happened with the UFC, people think they just showed up in the UFC that day and then they were legends.
Yeah, of course.
They've been building their brand for years and years and years on this scene. And we were all there with them, which made it so magical. And there was fan base there that had been there from their early fights, that this was a big moment for them. It's going to be very hard to create that kind of magic again over here. Credit to Bellator. They're putting on the most events over here. Cage Legacy do regional events. But it's not nearly on the same level, lads. I used to not have any weekend off away from travel, basically. I used to be going all over the place trying to watch these fights. So, it's not the same. It's definitely nowhere near the same. And it's a tougher environment now for our fledgling pros. Who really got a leg up from that UFC Dublin show 5 years ago, where everybody wanted Irish fighters, and now it's getting tougher and tougher for us to produce them with our regional scene. I don't understand why it's going down particularly. I know that the medical restrictions that are in place aren't helping the situation, but at the same time, when it's national news and there's court hearings about a guy who suffered a death in an MMA fight, there are always going to be ramifications to that, unfortunately.
Yeah, and the one thing that I want to chime in there is, you said it, you know, it's so hard trying to get information out of anyone.
It seems to be forthcoming with it now, but unfortunately the publications aren't there anymore, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, they're not reaching out, and I think something needs to be done. Maybe even, you know, going to, IMAF and seeing what the situation, their relationship is with IMA. Is it going in the right direction? I don't know. I'm very worried about it.
But they're definitely backing each other. IMAF and IMA, they're basically the same thing.
But it'd just be interesting to see, because, you know, you just get the feeling that everything's sort of aimed towards, you know, Bellator with John Kavanagh, and that, you know, there's nothing else really happening outside. And that's the real worrying thing, that maybe he's just gone, fuck it, you know, I'm focused on Bellator because they're putting on fights on a regular basis here, and nothing else outside that really matters to him. So that's my worry, and I don't really know where we go from here, because, you know, we need the likes of Cage Warriors back. We need KSW here on a regular basis with the Polish community. We were there in the Three Arena, 6,000-7,000 Polish people in Dublin.
Sellout.
It was a sellout, yeah. We need these other events, like Brave. We need them in the Republic to keep this scene thriving. Like, it's very, very sad when you see a guy like Paul Hughes, who's like 22, having to go off to the States and fight. Like, crazy shit, man. Crazy.
Yeah, 100%, 100%, all of that stuff and more.
Yeah, okay.
Wish we had more info on it. I'm actually going to get Andy on one of the days so we can speak about it. But that's all she wrote, guys. That's everything I have to...
Paul Pogba can fucking sling his hook as well.
Kerry's head to Australia to go to the preseason.
He had a fight with Jesse Lingard apparently today in Australia.
Pay good money to watch that.
Yeah.
So. Wonder if it was a flying knee.
I don't think there was any flying knees, but there was a bit of pushing and shoving, but I hope Jesse told him to go sling his hook and fuck off.
Jesus. Right.
That's not a nice way to end the show. I'm sorry.
Just let's get behind Niall going on a date with this girl from Love Island, Lucy.
To do it.
Yeah. He might go out.
She likes that surfer look. I actually have that surfer look today. I don't know if the hat on.
Surfer,
I do, yeah. And the trim body as well. I swear to God, I look like I need to lose. I tell you what I need. I need to go on a fucking diet, man. I have never been this fat. I sat at eating 6 pints of Guinness last night and a burger. And I was just like,
you ate pints of Guinness. That's fucking, yeah, well, break your teeth.
It's called soup. Like, you technically eat soup. So yeah, I ate the Guinness.
I'm glad to hear you're drinking is
a
intact.
A nice burger. And had a great sleep after a chronic weekend of mixed martial arts. Listen,
let's stop.
I know we got to go. I know we got to go. Sorry.
Love yous loads. Keep your ears on us and we will keep our mouths on your ears.
Jesus.
Love yous loads, lads. Kisses.